WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Cynthia Kadohata's first novel, The Floating World, is the story of a Japanese-American family traveling through the country in the 1950s looking for work. The story is told through the eyes of the adolescent daughter, Olivia. Cynthia Kadohata, like the narrator of her novel, is a second-generation Japanese-American who also experienced a rootless childhood. I asked her if, while growing up, she ever felt any pull between her Japanese past and her uncertain American present.
No, I wouldn't say I felt I was caught between the two, but I did feel sometimes I didn't quite belong here. I mean, I still feel that at moments, but I definitely feel more American. I've never been to Japan.
Did you feel your parents' conflicts at all? I suppose it was their parents that came to this country. Did you feel that they were at all in some kind of conflict about being here?
I know that one of my parents felt that, my mother has said that she'd rather be white. My sister, if she's going to be in America, she'd rather be white. My sister has said that she'd rather be white just because I think they felt that it would have been easier for them.
Your father was interned during World War II.
Uh-huh.
Why did they keep that a secret from you?
I don't know if they kept it a secret or if they just never told me, which is keeping it a secret. I'm not really sure, but when I ask him about it today, he's very kind of laid back about it, or I'll ask my aunt, and she'll say, well, no, it was like a camp. You know, you're only 15 or you're only a teenager, so it doesn't really matter. But he kind of acted like it was no big deal. And it wasn't until I got into college that I asked him a little more about his life, and he was still very reticent.
And knowing your father the way you do, was it a big deal?
Yeah, I think it changed his life. I think it was horrible. I think it was horrible for him, but it's hard when something like that happens to sort of regret it because you had just had no control over it. I think he, you know, would feel that if he admitted it, that would be a sort of, how hard it was, that might be a sort of defeat for him. I'm not sure. I actually was talking to someone the other day whose father was in a Nazi concentration camp, which of course was much more horrible. And he said his father was very matter-of-fact when he talked about it, and I'm not really sure why.
Your father really traveled, I guess this was during the 50s, looking for work after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it hard for him to find permanent work?
I'm sure there was some prejudice, but also he wasn't sure what he wanted to do. He had just gotten out of camp, and I don't know. I'm not really sure why. We don't really talk about, I haven't asked him about that.
What kinds of jobs did he hold down?
He was mostly sexing chickens, but he also, at one point, he and my mother owned a small grocery store. And let me see, he did do body and fender work also.
Tell us about sexing chickens.
Well, it's awful work. It does go on, you know, as I say in the book, for you know, hours, 17 hours. You know, you'll have a shift for 17 hours. And it's just, you know, you separate the males from the females and then you throw the males out because they're not, you know, they're not usable for laying eggs.
In your book, The Floating World, the father in this book sexes chickens, and many of the other people on the assembly line were Japanese. Was that true for your father as well? Was it the kind of work that people thought Japanese people could do?
Yeah, actually, I have heard people say, well, you know, Japanese are better at it. They have good hand-eye coordination or something, but I don't think that had anything to do with it. Today, I think it's a lot of Koreans. You know, it's just Korean immigrants. But before, yeah, it was almost all Japanese.
Your book is about a girl named Olivia. I mean, she's the kind of central character. It's really her memories, her pictures, her family that she talks about. I must ask how much of her is you and you are her, considering there seem to be a fair number of things that you two have in common.
I don't really think of her as me, but maybe in 30 years I'll look back and say that really was me. I'm not really sure. I don't think of it as autobiographical, but of course it is in some ways. But a lot of the events that happened are not true at all. So
I'd love to have you read the opening page of your book. Mm-hmm. You have a character, a rather memorable character, your grandmother, Oba-san.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just like to have you read the first two paragraphs.
My grandmother has always been my tormentor. My mother said she'd been a young woman of spirit, but she was an old woman of fire. In her day, it had been considered scandalous for young Japanese women to smoke, but she smoked cigars. Once, when she got especially angry, she took a piece of damp cosmetic cotton and placed it on my ankle so I would hear the sizzle of cotton and think it was skin burning. Later, she cried. Of the four of us kids, I thought she liked me least. My mother said she didn't dislike me, but just expected more of me because I was the oldest. My grandmother surprised my family by dying one night in a motel in California. Neither of my three brothers liked her any more than I did, and none of us cried at the funeral. My grandmother used to box her ears whenever she pleased, and liked to predict ghastly futures for all of us. We traveled a great deal, and sometimes in the car she talked on and on, until even my mother became annoyed and told her to keep it down, just as if she were one of us kids. When she got mad, she cursed me. "May you grow hair on your nose," she would say, and I would run to check a mirror.
Was there anyone in your family like her?
No, actually, in fact, some people who have read this, a friend of mine told me that a lot of people were talking that I was an abused child, about how I was an abused child and so on. But no, nobody ever, we weren't a family who even gave spankings, so.
Where did she come from then, this fictional grandmother of yours?
I don't know. I guess that just my imagination.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was thinking that I do have a memory of my father's mother. I hardly knew her, but I know she was a little temperamental, and I think of her. I think I thought of her, and then I just built on that. But I mean, I don't mean that in any way disrespectfully towards her.
This grandmother in your story is a storyteller. I mean, she can tell stories, I suppose, like nobody else. Mm-hmm. And you're a storyteller. I mean, in part is whoever this fictional person is that. Is that somebody you got this storytelling from?
Well, in that respect, she's probably telling the stories that I would want told to me. So it's more maybe my fantasy of what I would have wanted.
Well, both you and Olivia have had a kind of nomadic life where your fathers were looking for work. And Olivia describes traveling in the car, and she says, "We passed in and out of alertness when we traveled." Are you talking about that sort of trance state that you have when you're taking a long trip somewhere?
Yeah, that I think is very true to life. We did move around, and you did learn. Even today, I still tend to daydream a lot, so I think I learned that way back then, that was the only way to keep yourself occupied sometimes.
And does that road hum kind of add to that trance-like quality?
Yeah, I actually love it. I take Greyhound buses more frequently than I fly, so I think I learned to love it.
Well, what I was thinking of as I was reading your book was how when you are traveling in a car and you look out the window, there is a kind of frame. I mean, that the window actually frames the moving pictures as they go by. Mm-hmm. And it is, in a way, like going to the movies.
Yeah, it is. It was, in a way, it's probably bad. It might make you more passive because you're watching life a lot more than, but you're also living it, you know, in the confines of your car. But a lot of it is just watching, and it is like a movie.
What images do you remember?
I mainly remember, I guess, just seeing the land around me stretching out. And I remember motels a lot. I remember all those sort of, you know, pale blue swimming pools. I loved the motels, actually. They all looked the same, sort of, but I remember those. I think mostly motels and the landscape. Oh, and also diners.
In Japanese, ukiyo means floating world, mm-hmm. and it refers really to two things. One is a kind of district within a city, I suppose, that where the brothels and the bathhouses mm-hmm. were, I guess referring to kind of sensuality or some kind of pleasure. And it also means change or impermanence. And I'm mm-hmm. wondering what ukiyo or floating world means to you.
It means that. It means change and impermanence and yeah, just that, and just that feeling of change and impermanence. It's more of a feeling, I think. For me, it means more of a feeling than an actual place or an actual process.
Olivia, there's a sentence, or the beginning of a sentence in your book, where she says, "I thought I remembered." And I don't remember what she thought she remembered, uh-huh. but it reminded me of that feeling when you can't remember if what you remember is the truth or something that you made up. Do you know what that feeling is? I mean, do you trust your memory?
No. Well, I trust my memory of my feelings, but I definitely don't trust my memory of actual events. And so in that respect, maybe it is sort of autobiographical. Like, I don't know that the events actually happened, but I know that the feelings did.
Do you travel much now?
I love to travel, and I still take Greyhound buses when I go rather than flying, mostly. But, yeah, I do, and I have moved a lot as a grown-up as well.
And you like that the movement, again, the kind of exploration that comes from taking off?
I do like it. There are times when I feel a little disturbed because I don't know quite where I belong. I have family living all over. So there are times when you know, it bothers me that I've moved so much. But there are other times when I love it and I feel that it gives me a lot of freedom and autonomy.
This is your first novel.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that there are more in the works? I mean, is the next one starting?
Yeah, it's starting. I'm not that crazy about it yet, but yeah, it's starting.